Wait, no. We don't like that world. Different world, please. Ah, that's better. The Central Valley Sports Report starts now.
Welcome to hour number two. This is the Central Valley Sports Report on 1430 ESPN. I am your host, Paul Metters, live at First String Sports. Thank you guys for listening. This is Saturdays are always a lot of fun. It's time for the football players to recuperate after beating each other up on a Friday night or a Thursday night. But we love talking about the games and highlighting players and coaches up and down the central section. We just had a really good conversation with Clovis linebacker Noah Luganville, already the single season record holder for tackles. I think he broke it, what, his sophomore year, junior year, Jared?
Yeah, I think he tied it at 136. A kid, Alan Crowley, who I coached, was the tackle record holder at the time.
Okay.
And then last year he broke it with 152. Yeah.
152.
Which is cool. We invited Alan out to that game. It was great, man. Hey, that's the guy that used to hold it. It was a good moment.
Jeremy played at Fresno State, played a year at JUCO, has been coaching at Clovis High for a while, teaching at Clark still?
That's right.
Yeah, so bringing in Dad here, Noah's dad, which has been a treat. I've known Jeremy for a while. I remember, you know, seeing him around practices, and we chop it up. He's always very kind to me when I come up practice and come and say hi. So it's a pleasure to have you on the show. So I want to start with, with Coach Luganville. We're going to talk about Dad in a little bit, but I want to start with you being a coach, coaching the defense there at Clovis. I want to talk about the guards this game, right? Week one, Noah mentioned he's pretty hyped. It's senior year, you come out, LaMonica Stadium. It's my favorite place to watch a football game. But, you know, he gave up 27 points. You guys gave up a touchdown late in that and won a couple big ones. But how would you assess the game as a whole? Week one, there's usually some things you got to work on, some things that pop up. But what's your assessment of that game?
Yeah, it was wild. Garces was not the team they were last year. Obviously, they were a lot bigger up front last year, and it was a physical game in the box. This year it was a little different. You know, it was a triple option style. They actually, the tape that we got from them from their scrimmage was completely different from what we saw on Friday night. So there was a lot of learning on the fly. You know, we'd see a play the first time and maybe not fit it right, but you know, and knowing the rest of these defensive guys like our DNs and such, you know, they learned on the fly and they fit it up right the second time around. So there were a couple plays that we wish we could have back, you know, and it was a week one game. And I think we were happy with a win, but we weren't, we're not content with our overall performance. Absolutely.
And, you know, next week you're going to be playing Sanger. How would you compare Sanger's offense? You were at the game against, I know, I think for a half, but how would you compare what Sanger does to Garces? Right? I almost think a little bit similar, like Sanger. You know, they got some big boys up front. They like to pound it. But are they similar in any way?
Yeah, similar. And, you know, when you – anytime you play Sanger, I worked out there for 4 years. Those kids are gritty. And they're grindy. And I like their effort. And I like their tenacity. So it's going to be a great game at home in LaMonica this Friday night. Sanger – is going to travel well. I expect their side to be packed, and it'll be our first week back in school in Clovis, so I expect our side to be packed. So it's going to be a great game at LaMonica this Friday night.
Hey, and that's still surprising me. You know, I'm a teacher, and I went back. I have kids on August 9th, Clovis Unified the 21st. There's games yesterday, Clovis Unified. Student section is not even in class. It's kind of weird.
Right. It is weird, you know, because we're used to the best crowd in the Valley, to be honest. I believe that we have the best fans in the Valley, and we traditionally pack our house. So it is different to get a week zero game. You know, that's kind of what we call it when, you know, we're not back in school and kids and fans kind of aren't aware.
But there was a pretty good crowd. I got to be honest.
It was decent with the heat.
With the heat, was it a 7 o'clock kickoff?
It was.
Yeah, I think like about 6:48 or so. I was a little worried. I was like, come on, where is everybody? Oh yeah, it's pretty hot out here. So, but yeah, it ended up being a really good crowd. I'm gonna ask you. All right, so now let's switch a little bit between what it's like to be the coach of your son and then seeing your son out there, number 16, good player, right? So when you're looking out there, do you catch yourself being more dad or more coach?
Yeah, it and it's I'll tell you what, it's tough. It really is. It's harder than people think it is. I have to I have to be disciplined in that regard. You know, I don't want to you know, the fact of the matter is I'm going to be a lot harder on my kid than I am on anyone else, because I feel like I can say different things to a guy that lives in my own house, you know. So well, we've done a very good job of, you know, Brandon Barnes, who coaches our linebackers and is our D coordinator. If there's something that needs to be coached up on a Friday night, I will tend to take my headset off, give it to Noah, and let Brandon coach him up. You know, we got it. I think we got it a little wrong early on, where just because of the emotion of Friday night, you know, and the expectations that, you know, you tend to maybe cross the line a little bit. So we've cleaned that up, and I let, you know, Aaron Wilkins, our head coach, and Brandon Barnes kind of coach him up a little more than I would on a Friday night. Yeah.
Talking with Jeremy Luganbill, how much of yourself though, right, do you see in your son? That's probably the part of the conflict, right? You want the best for your son, see a lot of yourself. So I mean, even physically and you know, on the football wise.
Right. Yeah, he well, I'm gonna just go ahead and write it down, Paul. You know, he's better than I was in high school. And so he understands the game of football on a different level. You know, Scott Thompson, who I played with and who has coached at the various levels, says, you know, like he has a trigger, and coaches live and die on the fact that a player can or cannot see and go, you know. And so it's a different trigger. He doesn't hesitate, and that's what I think separates, you know, Noah from a lot of guys, you know, that play the game.
You played the game in Fresno State in the late 90s. And I talked a little bit on the phone this week, Jeremy, but talk a little bit about your football journey, your journey, you know, from JUCO ball to Fresno State and being a little undersized and being a tweener as far as position goes and changing your position. But just talk about your football journey.
Right. Yeah. So I'm from Riverside, you know, Riverside Poly, the IE, and thought I was going to Northern Arizona. That kind of fell through. And shoot, I was going to work for my dad. You know, I didn't think I was going to play football anymore. I ended up playing in the City County All-Star game and then going to Riverside City. Had a great year there with 8 interceptions. And then we had a coaching change. And man, I said, I'm out of here. If I'm not out of here, then I'm going to play against you guys. And so I played for Bill Brown in Riverside, who was the brother of Dan Brown. Bless his soul. You know, Dan Brown was a great guy that I got the opportunity to play for at Fresno State. And that was my connection, and that connection to Fresno. I remember driving up 99 to Fresno State, and I think I called Dan Brown 2 or 3 times, and I said, I think I'm lost. All I see are farms and grapes and cotton. I think I'm lost. It was a lot different driving up, you know, the 99 freeway in 1997 than it is now. And he said, just keep coming, just keep coming. And so, yeah, that's, you know, I got to Fresno. I was recruited as a free safety, and that was very short-lived, you know.
Figured it out pretty quick. It was a, what did you say? There was one hit, right? There was one hit, and you then you moved the linebacker.
Yeah, I think it all comes down to an inter-squad scrimmage that we had in the early fall. You know, I got a skinny post and smoked a kid by the name of David Shabaglian. And I think because I smoked that kid in the way that I reacted after the play, like I was in Dan Brown's office shortly after, and he said, hey, what do you think about moving a linebacker? My whole thought process was, am I going to get on the field quicker? And he said, well, you're going to be second on the depth chart right now. And I think I was fourth at safety at that point. So I was like, yeah, let's go.
So that might have been what, 96 or 97, that
97,
97
yeah.
when you had a couple interceptions as well. And mutual friend Efren Gazar, he had
Right.
that great year, right? He had
Yeah,
six of
right.
those. I think
It might have been
Efren
6 or 8. I don't know. He had a great year that
he had a
year.
great
Yeah.
year. So what are some standout memories from those years playing at Fresno State in the late 90s, you know, under Coach Pat Hill?
Yeah, I'll tell you what, like just the, you know, the anyone, anytime, anywhere, that was our mentality. And I remember going up to Air Force and blocking a kick to win a game, and I think they were 16th or 18th in the nation at that point, just upsetting somebody in their house and you know, kind of running off the field, like throwing helmets. I mean, it's just like, you know, the whole ESPN, like you see it on ESPN, and I'm
and that was you.
I'm living that, right? Yeah. Like you see it as a kid, and just going into your, you know, thin pie crust of fans that are in a stadium and pointing up into the crowd. I mean, it was, and then getting home, you know, off the airplane and watching it on SportsCenter, right? I mean, it's like surreal. As a kid, as a 19-year-old kid, it was surreal. And, man, that's, gosh. And just, you know, like I thank Coach Hill when I left. Like, Coach, just thank you for allowing me to live out my dream to play college football, you know. And so, memories, man, memories, yeah.
There are a couple on that 97 team, I looked at the roster, a couple NFL quarterbacks, two of them.
Yeah, right.
Billy Volek,
yeah.
David Carr.
Yeah.
And Billy was the starter. The stats weren't that impressive. I'm going to be honest, man. Like, yeah, Volek, NFL guy. I remember him being a little bit better. I think he threw like 16 touchdowns. But anyway, David Carr was the backup. You got any stories or memories of those two dudes? Like, did they even talk to you, even know who you were? Or were they just kind of in their own little world over there?
Man, I don't know how many stories I can share about Billy and I on the radio, you know, off the field stuff. But I'll tell you what, like, Dave was wearing 15 at the time. I was wearing 16. So our lockers were literally hip to hip, and Dave and I are still great friends, you know, and just, you know, it was just it's a great time, man. And it was known. I mean, I think it was known in the locker room, like, hey,
he's gonna be the
Dave is the guy.
Yeah,
like Billy is gonna finish out, and he did it well, you know. He obviously did it well, and we won some great games, and he managed that pro style offense that Pat used to run. And but it was evident, you know, that Dave was going to be the guy. Yeah.
Talking with Jeremy Luganville. So I was next to Pat Hill last night. And again, just, I mean, he's a legend. And anybody that played for him, most of them have stories of how he really challenged them in whatever way he wanted to communicate that. And, you know, a lot of guys talk, yeah, later in life, I learned, yeah, Coach Hill was right. Or he taught him some lessons. Are there any things that, you know, Coach Hill really taught you or some of your main takeaways from playing under him?
Gosh, you know, he was so hard-nosed. I just remember Pat. You could describe it as like a tough love, right? Like it was what he said on TV and what he preached in the meetings was really who he was, you know. And he was an undersized player. You know, he played center, right? And he played in a different era of football where it was smash mouth and it was, you know, bring it to a gap. And that was every single play. And so when you're an undersized guy and you're in a position that you probably shouldn't be playing. And so you had a different mentality, and that's the mentality he brought to the game of football. And I think those are the guys he recruited, you know, like the guys like me, maybe that didn't have the measurables, but they could play the game of football. And, you know, a lot of colleges, if you don't fit a body type and you don't fit the measurables, you're not going to play there. It doesn't matter how good you are, you know? And so, but Pat was big on like, I'm recruiting guys that can play the game of football. And I'm recruiting Valley guys, you know, and he stuck to the Valley. There's a lot of talent in this Valley. You know, we're looking at one right there that hasn't signed yet. So it's like, that was big under Pat Hill. And I think, there's a lot of similarities, though, with Coach Tedford and with his staff. It's real familiar again, right? When you see Jethro out there and J.D. Williams and Coach Coyle back. And, gosh, I played in the box with Tim Skipper. Yeah. You know, that's wild, right? And it's so – it feels familiar again. And I think that kind of some of that DNA stuff is back and hanging around.
Wow. Valley strong, right?
Right.
Yeah. The V for the Valley is it's back. And I think we have five kids from the central section that are committed to play at Fresno State. That's awesome. How has, you know, your experience coaching and playing at a high level, playing for Coach Pat Hill and those guys that you mentioned, playing with them, and how has that transformed you into coaching? What are some of the takeaways that you learned from those guys and what you've brought to your own coaching style?
I think, you know, coming into Fresno State, I thought I knew a lot about the game of football. And then I realized as I began to sit in meeting rooms, even, I mean, you talk about a scientist in regards to special teams and John Baxter. I mean, I saw special teams in a completely different light once I stepped on campus at Fresno State. Like, it was something that I wanted to do, not something that I had to do. You know, just breaking down, watching film, scheming, you know, like, the game just gets so much bigger once you come up, you know, from even from the junior college level. And I think the number one thing that kids see, you know, when they make the jump from high school to D1 or even from JUCO to D1 is the speed. Speed is just, you know, I could run, but there were guys that could run, you yeah. know what I mean? And yeah. so that was a big deal for me.
Yeah. Well, you know, you've been around the game a long time. You've seen a lot of good football players. You know, you've seen like Adrian Martinez up close, right? You've seen Caleb Kelly, you've seen Kendall Milton. You've seen like those dudes that God's blessed them with right. some ability, right? Just different. Right. But then, hey, a lot of guys, I mean, those guys had great careers on national TV, and you know, Adrian might make the Detroit Lions team, and you know, Kendall might be an NFL guy as well. So what I'm saying though is, like, what's the difference then between those guys that are uber talented to the guys that can perform at a D1 level consistently, right? There's that mental aspect that has to click as well, isn't there? Right? Talented guys, a lot of talented guys that wash out for whatever reason. So what's the difference?
Well, I'm going to tell you, I started over some guys at Fresno State that couldn't learn the playbook that ended up playing in the NFL, right? I mean, just think about that. Like, you, and you know, Coach Aaron Wilkins at Clovis High says that we want to be consistently good rather than occasionally great, right? So we're going to take that player that does his job all the time rather than the guy that has sparks of brilliance. And so why? Because as a coach, I can rely on that guy. I can trust that guy. I know that the game plan that we implemented is going to get put to the grass on Friday night. That's a big thing in the game of football. Like, I remember when I was, you know, running the program for Rich Hammond at Clark Intermediate, like, it's hard for me as an OC to call a game if I'm doubting whether the guy in the slot is going to run the right route, you know yeah. what I mean? So, and it's the same thing, you know, when Brandon Barnes is calling a blitz on Friday night, like, ooh, you know, I don't know if I can call it because the second linebacker's in. We got to know that we are preparing not just the first guys, but the second guys and the third guys, the what ifs, right?
No, yeah. I mean, that's absolutely perfect example that you want the guys that are consistent, guys that you can rely on. You might have a guy that can run a 4.440, but if you don't know how to write a, you know, run the right route, sorry, man, we're going to put in a guy that digs hard and gets it going on, right?
Right.
I want you to talk more about Clovis High. We got a few minutes here, Jer. You know, you mentioned Sanger, how you just love coaching those types of guys, the gritty type of guys. Just describe what you've seen at Clovis High, the types of players that you enjoy coaching and the type of, you know, program and atmosphere that you like there at Cougarland.
I'm going to tell you, Clovis High is different. You know, we are the original high school in the Valley.
You got the shirt
on.
In
the track, right, in the city of Clovis. And so, you know, somebody asked me, hey, what do you think this year? And I just said, hey, I'm putting my money on the Cougs. Like, I know who we are. I know what our DNA is. I know what our work ethic's like. I know what our expectations are. And so, you know, when and you and I had talked, it's not a cockiness, it's a confidence. And I'm never going to doubt our guys. I'm never going to doubt our coaches. I'm never going to doubt our players. They love each other. They would literally lay their lives down for each other, you know, and those are the guys that I want to roll with on Friday night. And really in life, those are the guys that I want to roll with in life. You know, they're young men now. They were kids when I had them at Clark. You know, they were 12, 13-year-old kids. And so for me, making the transition up from Clark to the high school a few years back during COVID, it was easy because I already had coached all these kids. Already had relationships with all those kids.
The track is pretty darn balanced this year, Jared. I mean, it's, you know, just looking at some scores yesterday, you know, I know Clovis West lost, but we know what they're capable of. Again, you know football as well as anybody around here. You know what it takes to win a Valley Championship or Central Section Championship. Cougars, they were close a few years back, man, and Jordan Love and Liberty beat you guys on your home field. But just looking at the way football is played now at the high school level? I mean, heck, it's probably different than 10 years ago. What type of personnel, you know, does it take to get over the hump to win a Central Section championship? You got to have your studs. You got a couple. You got a really good quarterback. You got a Deegan Rose. You got a good receiver. You got your son, but it's 1 of 11, right? So what does it take as a team, do you think, to get to that next level and make it go all the way?
Well, if you remember 2 years ago, we had a team that everybody was saying should have won a Valley, should have won a track, should have won a state title, right? And so why? And so I think that the camaraderie and the love and the trust and the respect and the unity and the brotherhood, you can have all the talent in the world, but if it's a bunch of disconnected puzzle pieces, man, the puzzle isn't going to get put together, right? So, again, what is it? We're trying to create a culture, and Aaron Wilkins is doing a great job of doing that. Like, the standard is the standard, and you'll hear him say that a lot. This is the standard, and that's the standard. And so if you can't get with the standard, then you probably can't get with Clovis High football. So just, it's a mentality. The mentality has changed. It's more old school Clovis High football than it's been since I've been around. And we are going in the right direction. And I'll just say that. And we're gonna live and die for each other, and that's just gonna be the mentality out in Clovis.
Good stuff. Good stuff, my friend. Always great seeing you, you know, watching your boy play Thursday night, talking a little bit after the game. Let's go. Let's come on the show. Let's chop it up. So, man, always enjoy talking with you. Thanks for sharing your story and you know, talking about Clovis football. We appreciate you, my friend.
That's right, man. I appreciate it. I
appreciate you. All right. Coming up after the break, we'll be talking more football. We got Yosef Ferris, the head coach at Justin Garza High School. They were able to defeat Emmanuel yesterday, and always enjoy talking with him. It's like a talk with Jeremy Luganville. We like the positive stories. We like what it takes to, you know, to get to the top of the mountain, but we also know that it's a journey. We're dealing with high school kids. High school kids are, man, you love them, you hate them, and a little bit everything in between. So it's always good to talk to Jeremy, and you know, fun to see his son Noah do great things. All right, coming up after the break again, Yosef Ferris, Justin Garza High School on 1430 ESPN. Welcome back to bottom of hour number two on the Central Valley Sports Report. You're listening on 1430 ESPN. Do you guys know you can also listen directly on the website? I do that sometimes. Sometimes I'll listen on my phone. Just go to 1430ESPN.com. Click on Listen Now. Listen to Gabe Camarillo Show, Home Field Advantage, Bulldog Hour, Tony D, Jose Gonzalez Show. You can listen to live, man. We're also doing some live streaming here on Facebook as well. So we're doing it right here on 1430 ESPN. We are the home of high school sports. Just had a great conversation with Jeremy Luganville, his son Noah. And, you know, it's always tough to coach your son sometimes. And, you know, most of the guys that coaches that I talk to where they have to coach their son or daughter, it could be very, very tricky. And usually, I like 99% of the time they say, well, I coach them up harder, and sometimes I have to back away, and that's just the nature of the beast. But you know, it's a great thing. They got a great thing going over there. And Clovis had a big win against Garces on Thursday. Speaking of big wins, we have Justin Garza head coach Yosef Ferris, friend of the show. We can say that, right? Friend of the show, yeah. For sure.
Sure.
Yeah. Well. Maybe a little bit less, because you beat my alma mater last night. Took care of Emmanuel at Emmanuel, 32-12, right? Second year as a head coach, building up that program, plays in the CMAC. We're going to get to that game in just a second, but summer, you had another exciting summer. Talk to me about your summer just a little bit, your internship with the Atlanta Falcons. Yeah. That's just a great thing. It's your second year being able to do that. So how cool is that, man?
It was awesome. You know, I got brought back for that Bill Walsh minority fellowship, and, you know, I was the first intern that they've ever brought back in that role. And they actually placed me as the lead intern, which was an amazing, amazing honor. And then being back in that building for the second time for OTAs, and just, you know, the players knew who I was, and the coaches, and, you know, Arthur Smith was just such a welcoming guy. And, you know, when the GM's walking up to you and saying, hey, you're a familiar face around here, you know,
Terry Fontenot,
that makes you feel good.
Yeah.
It was an amazing experience. And, you know, I still talk to those guys to this day. So I'm very, very excited about the connections I made out there in Atlanta, and, you know, just continue to build those and continue to bring back, you know, what I learned, try to get another one next year and see where that leads, and just continue to bring it back to Garza. It's an exciting, exciting opportunity to just be in an NFL room.
How big are NFL guys, right? Like when you see it, like we see them on TV, right? And we see it's listed, hey, this lineman's 6'7", you know, 3", whatever. Like when you're close to NFL guys, what's the best way to describe what they look like?
They're big. They're like that mannequin right there, which is a little bit taller. But you would be surprised, though, also that there are some guys that you're like, man, you know, you don't look like you would be an NFL player. And they are, you know. The guys that, you know, that what you would think are NFL guys, you know, the DBs and whatnot, they look like normal folk.
Yeah.
You know, linebackers are a little bit thicker, a little bit taller, a little bit longer. But the D linemen and those guys that set the edge, those guys look like they were cut from marble. You know, God created them a little bit different. You know, those guys are freaks. Cordell Patterson, you know, and Kyle Pitts, those guys look like, you know, Jake Long, those old linemen. Those are the guys that look that you think. But, you know, DBs, kind of those receivers, besides Drake London, he's a tall individual. But, you know, that's what I was trying to tell my kids. It's like, you know, if you're a skilled player, you can play, you know, if you have that speed, if you have that attention to detail, that wanting to learn, and just that the size matter as far as those skill positions, you know, DBs, they want them lengthy and whatnot, but the guys they got playing in the nickel, you know, those are not very big guys.
Yeah.
You know, and I was surprised to see that. And then, you know, linebackers too, because they want them to be so fast. And playing space now, because just the way the game has changed, you know, that they're not as big thumper looking guys as they used to be. You know, the LSU linebacker that they drafted, Mike Jones Jr., whose dad played in the league, you know, he looks, and he's a stud.
Yeah.
But, you know, he doesn't look like, he's not 6'5" and 250.
Yeah.
You know, he's maybe a little bit taller than me and can move.
You guys got some dudes on your Justin Garza team that can move, right? You got some guys that, you know, they were young the last couple of years, and now one season older, and, you know, you had a pretty good game against Emmanuel last night. What are some of the things that worked well? Who are some guys that stood out for you last night?
I was very happy with how we played defense last night. You know, we had them in a shutout situation and had only 6 points really given up. They scored on the very last play of the whole game to get it to 12. And, but other than that, our defense played phenomenal. We had a goal line stands. We had a scoop and score. We caused a fumble, scoop and score for a touchdown. They had two big runs on us, and we chased it down from behind and had worked our punch out drill, basically what we work every week in practice, and the kids worked it, and we knocked out two balls that could have been and recovered two balls that could have been a touchdown in their direction. So I thought defense played really well. Offense started off rusty, but once they got going in the second half, they started being explosive like we were expecting them to be.
Okay, who's they? All right, you mentioned, all right, who's well, quarterback? I mean, you got Caleb Matthews.
Caleb London, Lee Williams, Nacho, Ignacio Miller, Kyvir Major, Amari Bogan. Just that whole offense is explosive. Taj Bishop, Francisco Gamma. And then our O-line, you know, they're 3 years now within the system and getting coached by George Petrosans. And, you know, they started pushing guys around, and that's what we expect from them. And so the second half was much more of what we want to do offensively at Justin Garza.
It's safe to say that you're a defensive minded coach. Is that it? And you're the defense.
That's what they keep telling me.
You're defensive coordinator, right? You're in special teams, like you're not. What's the role look like?
I'm not the D coordinator. My D coordinator is Justin Nass.
Okay,
and he does a tremendous job. And he puts so much effort and energy into it. And you know having a head coach like me that's such a defensive guy, sometimes it gets a little tough with all the advice and and me bumping into meetings and whatnot with, but he does a tremendous job and he puts up with me. So
that's awesome. Is there, you know, you mentioned those two plays where you're working on it in practice, you know, especially week one, right? You probably, you know, do it in the summer. You're doing it during, you know, hell week, whatever you guys call it now. And kids are probably like, why are we doing this drill? Come on, coach. Why are we doing this drill? And then boom,
yeah,
happens in a game. You find yourself in that situation and you do it twice. How satisfying is that?
We did it three times and it was great. And so we love showing them those. What we love to do is we love to take clips from the game or clips from practice and saying, hey, look at this is the Utah pursuit drill. Hey, you look at this is circle chase drill. Hey, look at this is box drill, open field tackling. This is inside out angle. This is outside in angle. These are the things we're working. This is you coming to balance. And when we can show them the drill translating to the game and we show them that on film, then they buy in more, you know, and they do that in the NFL, you know, every practice they're showing drill to live rep work. And so we're always trying to show them that. And so when they're just not out there just doing drills to do drills,
yeah,
you know, even though we know as coaches that it's important, but when you can show them, hey, this drill is translating to this play, then they buy in.
Yeah.
Then it's even more of a buy-in. And so we're going to have a lot of buy-in on the circle chase drill. I'll tell you that right now.
Talking with Yosef Ferris. And I think too, as a coach, right, I love watching sidelines and body language. I'm, you know, huge into that when I'm watching a game. Coaching staffs get more hyped for plays like that you describe than, you know, than a 56-yard touchdown pass, yeah, a lot, right? Because, yeah, sometimes you're just like, yeah, that's what we expect from you. Yeah,
yeah,
of course. But when a play like that happens where you're working on a practice and maybe it comes up four or five times, you know, a year could. You never know. That hyped you guys up pretty good.
No, yeah. And we had a goal line stand too that, you know, it was like on fourth and inches that we got. That was the most hype I've been in a long time on that particular situation. But yeah, anytime you see some drill work translate to the game, that fires you up, you know.
What's so after the game, like what's a normal post game routine for you? What time are you getting home? Are you still hyped? Are you drinking coffee still? I mean, what's your normal?
I don't know about
coffee, but... I don't know. Are you staying up till? I know some coaches are like, I'm going straight to the film. I'm going to sleep till 4 a.m. I mean, there's some guys like that. What kind of guy are you?
God bless those ones. No, we got to get the bus to the school. And then what we did is we just, a bunch of guys came over to my house and we kind of just talked through the game and, you know, had some coffee and just kind of went through, you know, our thoughts and whatnot. We had CPR training this morning, so we were all ready to get to bed and kind of get up for that. But
that was a school yeah, thing. Got to do your CPR.
Yeah, got to get your CPR done.
I've gone through all those, and it seems like every time I go through, there's something new and different. Like last year, it was like 20 chest compressions, and then you lay off for 10 seconds. Now we found out that it's 50 30. It's 30. Or whatever.
It's 30 chest compressions.
So there you go.
120 per minute.
Okay. Yeah, you remember your stuff from this morning. I want to go back a little bit to last year, right? So again, was it a 2-year contract with Emmanuel? So you opened with, yes, them at your place.
Yeah.
You went to their, mm-hmm, complex last night. So last year, I mean, literally started off with the bang, opening kickoff, Landon takes, yeah, it to the house. Yeah. You guys are hyped first year, all that great stuff. Mm-hmm. What was the difference between like last year at home and all that to like this year away? You know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
were you just more calm? Were you just like, you felt like you had a better squad? I mean, what, talk us through that.
I was texting a bunch of coaches the day, right before the game, just wishing them luck and whatnot. And I don't know what it is. I've been coaching for 21 years and game days, I'm still nervous wreck. I got to keep myself calm. So there was definitely no calmness to it. In my demeanor, yes, but in my head and my body, no, you know? So I'm always just worried about how we're going to play and whatnot. And then they kick the ball off and then that all goes away. You know, we're playing ball and we're coaching. I tell you what, Coach Henderson out there is doing a tremendous job at Emmanuel, and they're going to be a problem for some people. They're physical, you know, they're sound in what they do. And, you know, he gets those kids to play hard. you know, and it doesn't have a lot of numbers, but those kids play hard. And it was a cool atmosphere, you know, and they were very welcoming. And their youth team booed us when we walked off the field, which I thought was amazing.
Little guys, huh?
Yeah, little kids booing us, which was freaking cool. I told them, I said, that's awesome. But no, it was fun just to be back out there, you know, hitting somebody else and getting going and seeing a new complex. I hadn't been out to that Emmanuel Sports Complex, and that's an amazing facility right there by the river. And no, hats off to them. They did a tremendous job. Yeah. It was a fun experience.
Coach Henderson, Josh Henderson, he's old school. And that complex, you're right, is amazing. There's a football track, and then there's the two softball, two baseball mm-hmm. fields that are, you know, that make it right there. So yeah, it's a nice facility. They're going to get that going, and you know, sooner than later. We make a lot, Joseph, about week one, right? And you see that in the NFL. You see that in everything, right? Overreactions, mm-hmm. right? Oh, what's going on here with this team? Oh, this team's in trouble. Oh, this team looks really good. It's just a small piece of a larger season.
Yeah.
Right. So, you know, after a performance, right, in week one, it's maybe good or bad, whatever it is, like, how much stake as a coach and coaching staff do you guys put in week one? You just kind of understand, guys, it's a process. It's a long season. Yeah. How do you guys look at that?
Yeah. Well, I mean, you don't want to hit your peak week one. You know, you want to build up and you want to slowly hit your peak, you know, when you're getting into playoffs. And this is the old saying, you know, your real first practice of the season is week two, Monday, you know, because you've been grinding these kids and doing all that stuff. And it kind of gets mundane and they get kind of bored with all the routine and whatnot. And they really haven't hit anybody. And then after week one, it's like, okay, now we're in the game. So, you know, week two, Monday is really the first like season where they're in season practice in a player's mind. But week one, you know, you always want to start off with a big bang because you put so much effort into the off season that you want to come out with a win. Cause then you get more buy-in, you know, you get more, just, you know, players' confidence, to start off with a W like that, you know? And then us going against Buchanan in the scrimmage, that was a big jump for us as well. You know, playing a Division I powerhouse like that and kind of getting to see that early. And the kids handled it well, you know. We saw the growing areas that we needed to grow in, and we saw, you know, we saw what we did well, and we got better at those things, and it's a great test.
I want to ask you, too, I'm just curious about this. You know, again, long season, week one, good, bad, ugly, a little bit in between for a lot of teams, but when, as a coach, do you decide, like, a coming to Jesus moment with the team, right? Like, you got to feel that out, like, when to hit them really hard, when to, you know, is it when, maybe it's when you feel like the team's complacent. It could be even after a win where you're not satisfied with body language or a couple execution or something that was lackluster. It could be after a terrible loss. Like, how do you decide when those big coaching moments come up where, like, okay, this team could go this way or this team, but we're going to have a discussion?
I think it just comes from experience in years, you know. This would be 21 years for me, and I just kind of know when those moments pop up. I can read the body language, and especially with this team, we know this team so well. We've had them since they were freshmen, you know, and for 3 years, and we've been with them almost every day of the year,
yeah,
except for the Christmas break. But you know, we know this team pretty well. We can see it. We can tell when the body languages start to turn. And that's one thing we preach right now. Cause our biggest enemy at Garza right now is us. Is when we get into adverse situations, we need to be able to fight through those and stick together. And our kids know that. And we preach that. And it was great to hear them talk about it last night. Keep your heads up, stick together. You know, we're in this together. And, you know, we have a chant family, you know, we don't, everybody says family, it's kind of cliche, but for us, family is, you know, forget about me, I love you, you know? So that's kind of what we go with, and that's our chant. And so they've really bought into that, and they're still kids. So they're going to have their moments where they have steps, setbacks, but they're doing a great job of buying into what we're selling.
Were there any scores last night that really shocked you? We were able to broadcast the Clovis North over San Joaquin Memorial 62-8 game. There's some wide margins games in the C-MAC, but I mean, wild and wacky week one, right?
It was. There were quite a few scores that shocked me. The Memorial score, the North Memorial. I know North is good, and I know those running backs are unbelievable. And Brandstetter does a tremendous job of getting those guys going. That was a surprise. And I think, you know, the Bullard score obviously is always going to be a surprise to me. You know, the Edison score, that was a surprise. The C-MAC, all the C-MAC scores were a surprise. The Clovis West St. Mary's game. Now, maybe I didn't know enough about St. Mary's or whatnot.
Yeah, we talked about that. Like, St. Mary's actually, they were ranked 19th in the state, according to Cal High. So a lot of people are like, yeah, they got a running back. So I think a lot of us in the Central Second, like, we don't think St. Mary's is a good team, but they had a good team.
That one was a little shocking. And then, not shocking, you know, because I know St. Mary's can, you know, recruit and do those things, but, just, I thought Clovis West was going to pull that one out. But those would be the ones that stuck out to me the most.
So you guys, Justin Garza, let me look at the schedule here really quick. You guys are going to be taking on Rigetti next week at home, Sanger West away, Tulare Union at home, and Kalinga away. Kalinga's got a good team again.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Kalinga's they bring back that quarterback and that receiver.
Yeah, quarterback's good. I want to ask you, we got a couple minutes here, Joseph. What type of team, you know, makeup, personnel-wise, you know, personality-wise, does it take? I asked Jeremy Luganville the same type of question. Like, you know, what type of personnel does it take to get over the hump to win a Central Section title at any level?
Well, the real successful teams that I've been fortunate to be a part of, I think the common theme that they all had is that they played for each other. They didn't play for the coaches. You know, the leadership didn't come from the coaching office. It came from the locker room. And those guys really had a bond because they all grew up together playing football together. And they really wanted to play for each other. And then there's the commitment to the extra, you know, and the little things, you know, showing up to workouts on time. Not having the coach have to call you or whatnot, just getting guys rides, you know, kind of those buy-in that we've had to deal with. You know, you might not have to deal with that anywhere else, but the really good teams, they get that done. And then just, you know, the attention to detail and how you handle adversity. You know, it's not that the teams that win championships didn't have any adversity. It's just they handled it a lot better than everybody else. And I think that's a huge deal. And then your culture that you create, you know, because culture breeds behavior. Behavior gets response. And, you know, what kind of responses do you want? I heard Luganville talk about the standard is the standard. We say the same thing, you know. The standard is the standard, you know. And that's the culture. And that's kind of how you build your program. And the more buy-in you have of that from administration, from your players, from your parents, you know, it's a whole big show going on. And everybody needs to be going in one direction, you know, and having faith. That's why I love PJ Flex row the boat mantra. You know, your back's to where you're going, and everybody's got to pull their weight, and you got to have faith you're going in the right direction.
We got a couple of minutes here, Coach. What's the ceiling for Justin Garza football
this year, or just the program?
I'd say the program as a whole.
The program can be one of the best in the valley. There's so many kids in that area, and now the battle right now is just, you know, keeping our kids that are supposed to come to Garza coming to Garza and not going to Central East, you know. And, you know, we're hoping that the district and the administration kind of help us out with that as far as, you know, closing the borders and whatnot. But that's really it. I mean, if we get all the kids we're supposed to get, Garza and Central will both be powerhouses. You know, and that's kind of the thing. We're the brand new school on the block, so we got to show everybody what we're about. And so, you know, this is a slow cooker job, not a microwave job. It's going to take some time. It's going to take us putting a lot of blood, sweat, and tears into this thing, and really showing the community out there that Garza is a very viable option.
And I'm looking at that hat, man. I love that hat, that JG right there with the red and the black and. You know, got the Guardians, and Justin Garza was a very instrumental person and very beloved person in the community. So I know you are representing the school well, and I always love talking with you. You are definitely a friend of the show, and Noah can count on you for have a conversation and come and chop it up a bit. But I can't leave our conversation with a little bit of Star Wars talk. You know where that was coming.
I knew it.
All right, we got about 30 seconds here before we got to take a break and then wrap everything up. What's your favorite Star Wars? We're kindred spirits in that way. What's your favorite Star Wars moment of all time? Movies, TV, whatever.
Oh, man.
Books. I know you're a big book guy.
Yeah. That's a tough one. You got 30 seconds. I mean, they put me on the spot there. I mean,
all these questions I got about.
And The Mandalorian, when Luke came out, you know, that was, I text you right away. That was an amazing moment. Me and my wife love the Han Solo. You know, I love you. I know. You know, we always say that.
You got the t-shirts and everything. Yeah, there's some t-shirt for that. Yeah. His and her.
I don't know. They're all great.
And I know you went to Disneyland too.
I did.
You've been to Disneyland and seen Star Wars before.
My daughter loves Star Wars.
I'm
a big nerd, if everybody doesn't know.
All right, there you go. You said it publicly. I am too. I admit it. I've been on there too. But all right, we're gonna take a small break. We're gonna wrap everything up. Yosef, again, thanks for coming on. Good luck the rest of your year.
All right, thank you.
All right, we'll take a break. Thank you guys for listening very much. This has been Central Valley Sports Report on 1430 ESPN. Thanks to Lee's Air Plumbing and Heating, First String Sports, Jorge Rodriguez, Gabe Camarillo, Jeremy Anoa, Luganville, and Yosef Ferris. We will talk to you next week on 1430 ESPN.